Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
And hello to my wonderful, wonderful audience as you join me, having listened to Vangelis in the background, with what strikes me as a rather solemn introduction that has been recorded, but I kind of like it. Today is a good day for me because I'm going to be talking again with a dear friend of mine, and I'll introduce him in a couple of minutes. I want to tell you some interesting things that are going on, catch you up a bit first, because you are the best folks in the world to talk to and to share with you what I'm doing that may interest you, because you are the most alert and best folks in this whole field of psychology and psychiatry and mental health and just lots of related fields as well. My guest is, as you'll meet soon, he's been on before, but he's a dear friend and such a good man and such a creative man and such a thoughtful man that his hours with me are always very enjoyable. And I'll just give you a hint. His first name is Kevin. Kevin, are you there?
I am, Dr. Bregan. Good day.
Good day, Peter, Dr. Bregan, indeed. Before introducing Kevin further, let me tell you about some things that are going on, folks. For one, I want to remind you that our Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy is co-sponsoring two separate conferences this year. When we co-sponsor a conference, we neither give money to it, although we might help somebody come to it, one of the speakers, and we take no money out at all. The conference is run by the people we co-sponsor with, and we have the honor of lending our name, supporting it, advertising it, and I get to organize a portion of it. The first conference is coming up on July 26th, 2017. You can connect to these conferences, by the way, by going to Bregan.com, my website, Bregan.com, and just looking at upcoming events. That's up at the top of the homepage, upcoming events. And the first one's July 26th. And it's the William Glasser Institute. Bill, who's no longer with us, was the author of Reality Therapy and other good books and was an old friend of mine. The Bill Glasser Institute, July 26th. And it's going to be on the campus at North Carolina State University, near Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm going to be doing an opening day, full-day workshop with Robert Whitaker. I invited Bob to come and join me for a full-day workshop at the William Glasser Institute. That's going to be on July 26th. You can find out how to join there, how to join and how to come hear us talk. And then we're going to have a ton of time. If you ever wanted to ask Peter Bregan and Robert Whitaker, whom you know as the great reformed journalist and author of some of the best books in the field, about in criticizing psychiatry, looking seriously at psychiatry. And you'll just be able to interact with us throughout the day. He's going to make a presentation, then we'll have a lot of discussion, then I'm going to make a presentation, we're going to have a lot of discussion, and we're going to talk some more. And then on the following day, on the 27th, I'm also going to give a luncheon talk. So that's a lot of contribution from me, a lot of opportunity to see and work with me. And just the William Glasser Institute itself is a good thing to come to. And I notice a misprint on here, the William Glass Institute. I'll have to get in touch with my assistant It's not my wife, Ginger. She didn't make that kind of mistake. My assistant doesn't generally either. But we'll get that fixed. And so that's coming up July 26, 27. And I think it continues on the 28th. And then in November 10th through 12 of this year, November 10th through 12, Columbus, Ohio, I'm co-sponsoring the Wellness Forum Health 21st Annual Conference. It's the 21st Annual Conference of the Wellness Forum Health. And Pam Popper, a nutritionist, a dear friend of mine, is the main sponsor. I'm just a minor co-sponsor. And I've invited Peter Goetze to come and talk. So Peter and I are going to do presentations at the conference. The Wellness Forum is based on the concept that we'd all be much, much better off if we ate more vegetables, had a vegetable-based diet, and if we used far fewer medications, including no psychiatric medications. And we're doing amazing things together, Pam Popper and I. We're developing courses. We're developing certificates. I mean, we're doing a lot of exciting things together. So Pam Popper, Wellness Forum with me, November 10th through 12th. Because of Pam's influence on me, on May 31st, I went on an all-vegetable diet, which I'm adhering to, not with absoluteness, which Pam does not necessarily say you must do, although she's, you know, she probably very rarely eats anything other than vegetables. But I mean, I'm pretty much on a vegetable diet. Let me tell you the results since May 31st, which is a month and 10 days ago. I've lost 13 pounds. Yay for me. And this was a miracle I did not expect. I no longer am suffering every day with asthma and allergies. I mean, that happened within a week or two. I just don't believe it. Now, I don't know if I mentioned this to you all on the radio, but I called Pam up and I said, Pam, I've been on this thing a week and I don't have asthma and allergies anymore, except very slight. And I'm not even having to treat it. And whereas I was really using inhalers a lot for the last few years. And she said, well, welcome to my world. And her world is a recovery without medication, although she's not a complete naysayer on medical medication. And my world is recovery without psychiatric drugs, period. So we've joined worlds, Pam and I, looking forward to a lot of wonderful stuff. And come and you'll learn about the vegetable-based diet. You hear science, science, science. No gimmicks, no special supplements that will change your life, but good, solid evolutionary and scientific evidence for a largely vegetable diet. It's really improving my life a lot. So those are the things that I want to tell you about there. And then, gosh, I'm going to take another 3 minutes and use up some of the time with Kevin, but I hate to do that. But I've had another legal victory. It's going up on the website today. One of my biggest cases, which is the Mazzella case, was a number of years ago, won in court at a trial with a $1.5 million verdict for the family of a man who committed suicide. There was a combination of this doctor keeping him on Paxil for 11 years without seeing him and then upping his Paxil, sight unseen by the poor medical practice. But I also was working with the idea that Paxil actually contributed to his suicide, as well as what the doctor had been doing. And unfortunately, that got overturned, not because of me at all. In fact, the New York State Appeals Court went out of its way, and I was very grateful for this, to say that the evidence presented was sufficient for the malpractice verdict. So, you know, I did a good job. But they had allowed in evidence, the judge had allowed in evidence. They were really critical of the judge, who had allowed in evidence about a lot of other bad things this man had been charged with by the state of New York. So they thought that was prejudicial. And so they, overturned the verdict and called for a new trial. Now, for the new trial, they were, again, Monday, they were very, very well prepared to go after me, which they weren't prepared for the original trial. And so they did what's called a Frey hearing on Monday, in which they declared that all of my views on Paxil had no scientific basis. This is the defendants. And they refused to settle. They refused to settle this terrible case because they were sure they'd knock me off scientifically and then there'd be nothing left to the case. They said Paxil didn't cause suicide in adults, no evidence. They said SSRI and antidepressants don't cause suicide, no evidence. They said my claim that SSRI and antidepressants cause particularly violent suicides. This man had stabbed himself to death multiple times. Just awful. That wasn't true. They argued with my statement that SSRIs over time will cause a general deterioration in a person's mental health. So you can't just leave them on for 11 years. They differed with me on a bunch of items. So I gave them a write-up, an affidavit, in which I cited 37 scientific articles and gave them printouts of them upholding my various claims about the harm done by Paxil. Oh, and also withdrawal, that suicide associated with withdrawal, suicidal behavior from Paxil and other drugs, and the Paxil was the worst. So I had 37 documents, and the judge came back Tuesday morning. I was supposed to be testifying today. Tuesday morning, the judge came back and said, "Now I agree with that Bregan has scientific evidence for every one of his claims." So they settled, and I didn't have to go and testify today. So it's a victory in this important area of that I'm having again and again now of convincing judges that, and rightfully so, that there is a scientific basis for my opinions on the harmful effects of antidepressants and antipsychotic drugs and stimulant drugs and benzodiazepines and so on. So it's a good feeling. Now for an even better feeling, my friend Kevin Miller, who is an internationally award-winning writer, producer, and director. His films have won a lot of international film and television awards. We've known each other for years because when he learned about psychiatry, he came to me to film me for the start and interview me for hours for the start of his first film about psychiatry, which was Generation X. And then later, when he got so many responses to it, he came back to do his second film, Letters from Generation X. RX. And now Kevin is doing a lot of work with Letters from Generation RX and developing it into different forms. And he's going to tell you all about this. Folks, I've never asked you to do this before, but applaud Kevin Miller, who really devotes his life to something that doesn't exactly make him rich and not nearly famous enough. Kevin, welcome to the show and to my spontaneous applause.
Well, hey, thank you. I'm well. I'm doing very well. Thank you for a very, very kind introduction. Infamous, perhaps. Famous, heck no. But, you know, I've at least had the great honor and pleasure of exploring some of these issues with people whom I have grown to truly admire, like yourself, of course. You were the first person that I interviewed for Generation RX. And then, oddly or not, the second person that I interviewed was Bob Whitaker. So
that's a 1-2 combination. That's a stunner.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I came to you first because you had been the contrarian in the field, offering forth science about the how unscientific the drugs were for psychiatric conditions, as they're called, and then to get Bob's layman's perspective as a science journalist and writer was equally as fascinating. So
Bob Whitaker. Really, you said layman, I think. Bob Whitaker.
Well, I don't think I said a layman, but
his layman
as a layman.
I see.
Yeah, late
his
person.
Layman's
yes.
approach.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tell Bob Whitaker that he introduces himself as a layperson journalist, but he's a great scientist. Whitaker's a great scientist.
Yeah, and you know, that's the kind of thing that people don't – I certainly didn't recognize about him early on when he first stumbled into this field. But I think, you know, in order to be a science journalist, you really have to connect the dots. And you have to have an awful lot of intellectual curiosity to follow it through. And my, you know, excitement about interviewing Bob a number of times was just that. It communicates very well. He obviously was aware of all of the players in the field, you being the primary one. And, you know, I mean, just a great honor to start my first film that way with you folks back to back. And only have learned more each step of the way over the last, I guess it's 11 years since you and I did that first interview.
In fact, you filmed me for the first time in my office here in Ithaca, which I had just moved to in November of 2002. So I think you filmed me here.
Yeah, I did. I did indeed. I'll never forget it because it was a great. You introduced me to Michael Gilbert, who's done so much wonderful work in the state of New York and mainly in the Syracuse area. But you also introduced me to Michael there, and I had a much shorter interview with Michael after that. But he has a group. It's all about children and families, right? It's his group. So I know that you've done an awful lot with him over the years, and he admires you just as much as I do. And unfortunately, I guess if there is a, you know, an unfortunately to be stated here is that, you know, it took all of these decades for you to have revealed to the public all of the things that you've been saying for decades as fact back in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Early 2000s. Now, how the whole pendulum has swung back, and people are now immediately recognizing your truths from decades ago, and now are actually starting to report on it in many, many ways. So, not enough, of course, but that's why you inspire filmmakers like myself and people like Bob Whitaker and others to go out and seek the truth, because you've been doing so for so long without very many people having your back, so to speak. So for me, it was never even a question that you were correct, because I not only the integrity from which you spoke, but all the material in your books and all the various material that you helped me find in terms of research and decode in many ways. So I'll always be immensely grateful to you, Peter, for that.
Thank you so, so much. And my gratitude to you is enormous for getting the word out in these two really good films, Generation RX and Letters from Generation RX, does such a great job of getting the word out and bringing together not only my voice, but multiple voices of professionals and people who have suffered and fought back. And people who have not survived, you bring together such a great, great groups of people in your films. I meet experts through your films that I haven't even known who are doing good work.
Wow, that's really nice. And thank you. I'm certain that many of them who you didn't know prior to the film were probably using you as source material almost immediately when they first discerned, you know, that there was something amiss, if you will, about the science regarding these drugs. I would say probably Irving Kirsch should be one of those people, because he is featured briefly in Letters from Generation RX, but he and I have had conversations about you, And of course, what he did was he went in and literally looked at all of this scientific studies, end quote, that were submitted to the FDA about antidepressants, and of course discerned that they were no better than placebo, and in many ways not as good as placebo. And so, you know, again, without people like you that were doing the hard work, taking the socks on the nose and getting attacked, of course I know you still get attacked, you know, probably daily by some of the people in the orthodoxy and the psychiatrists who want to merely keep the lie alive that the DSM is truly scientific and a meaningful reference, if you will, for mental health conditions and symptoms, really, of mental health conditions. But a lot of people have learned from you, Peter, and whether or not you know it, whether or not you ever meet them, whether or not, you know, they ever acknowledge it, it'd be kind of silly for me to say that I didn't read four of your books and God knows how many other countless hours of studies and things that you've written over the years. So, you know, for me as an independent journalist, independent filmmaker, whatever one wants to term me, that kind of information that you can trust is truly invaluable. And the way that my mind works, it would always, reading your material, your books, your studies, your analyses of studies, it always prompted 100 other questions that then I would go pursue through various avenues. Because for me, obviously as a lay person who isn't a scientist, the most important thing for me is to be able to communicate cleanly about the complexities of the science of the quote studies, end quote, and so much more that we know now about the effects the real effects that psychotropic drugs have on the people who take them. So, I mean, we all are certainly in your debt of gratitude.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. I want to remind folks that I now have up these three huge resource centers that are free and that have explanations and hundreds of scientific articles at your fingertips, categorized. And they all begin with 1, 2, 3, so you can get to them easily now. It's 1, 2, 3 antipsychotics, 1, 2, 3 antidepressants, and 1, 2, 3 ECT. You don't have to Google. You just go and put it right in. That's the URL, 1, 2, 3ECT.com, 1, 2, 3antipsychotics.com, and 1, 2, 3antidepressants.com. So make good use of that stuff. It's got thousands of hours of work in them.
They should do that immediately, particularly because, you know, the whole mission, as you say, I certainly don't make very, very much money out of this. As a matter of fact, I'm still paying off Letters from Generation RX. But, you know, the whole idea is to get credible information into the hands of consumers, information that they can then either take to their doctor if they do have a trusted medical doctor, which is rare, as you well know, or to fight their doctor one-on-one, if you will, you know, on a point-by-point basis when they are the doctor is trying to prescribe someone an antipsychotic or Ritalin or Zoloft or whatever psychiatric drug it is. So, with, you know, people, as you know, Peter, having seen patients for so long and counseled so many people, it's a completely different experience for the consumer or quote unquote the patient when they're not just blindly genuflecting before the white lab coat. And you know, most of us are sensitive or we're in a vulnerable position when we go see medical doctors because we think that we don't have anywhere near the training or capacity for absorbing the information that they do. But when they use resources like your books or your online websites or you know, dare I say, you know, one or two of my films, they are speaking to their doctor from a completely different perspective. And, you know, we like to talk in this country about having the world's greatest health care and all the rest of this nonsense. But really the most important thing that I've fought for over the years, as you know, is just truly fully informed medical choice. And, you know, again, people who have questions, fears, anxiety about whether or not to take these drugs or what these symptoms mean would do themselves a huge favor by looking up some of your resources and buying some of your books. And that's what I would certainly encourage people to do.
Now, your language of informed medical choice, that is exactly the life work of Pam Popper, you know, with whom I'm now developing a real good working relationship. And Pam is doing the conference on November 10th and 12th that I talked about in Columbus. It's on the website. And Pam talks about informed medical choice. And I don't know what you think about the – I can't remember what your eating habits are, even though we've spent so much time together. But I've just learned so much from her about the vegetable-based diet. Tell me about your own eating. I can't remember. I remember the things. I remember sitting in a wonderful cafe outdoors and having coffee and a snack with you and chatting. And I remember meals with you and dinners. But I can't remember what your dietary habits are.
You know, I mean, I actually met Pam back in the 90s, and I don't even think I've seen her since, but I actually produced a film that was narrated by James Earl Jones called Let Truth Be the Bias. And it was an examination of nutrition and let's call them what Eisenberg wrote about in New England Journal of Medicine in 1993 or four, unconventional medicine, if you will. And nutrition and diet were part of that, and the effects that nutrition has on disease conditions, as you mentioned, your allergies. I mean, these kinds of things are things that I've been interested in since quite literally 30 years ago, if not more. So it's something that I've been studying for a long time. I don't eat a wholly vegetarian diet or vegan diet, but you know, I've been very, very conscious of nutrition for decades now. And so it's something I'm glad to hear that you are getting results for yourself. And truly, Peter, truth be told, this is the reason that I ended up stumbling into the field of study of psychotropics, is because I had started to work in examining the orthodox medicine and drugs of all sorts, whether they were heart drugs, cholesterol drugs. And then, you know, one day in the National Archives, as I've told you the story in the past, I stumbled onto a videotape of the 1991 FDA Prozac hearings. And having been developed a leeriness about FDA in the late 80s and early 90s, this was quite startling to me to have seen those videotapes at the time. So, you know, even though the films that I was working on in the 90s were not related to mental health, I never forgot those stories from the FDA Prozac hearing and what I learned from that. And so that indirectly is how I got involved in the films that I've produced over the last, 8-10 years now.
Well, one of the things that is changing about me now and growing is that I always felt that I would have my impact by focusing on psychiatry. And I always assumed that what I was learning about psychiatric drugs and the power and the money and the utter corruption and the entirely fake premises of psychiatry was wasn't that bad in general medicine. And I wasn't very much into the idea of diet at all or of good eating. You know, to some extent you have to be as a educated person, but I wasn't much into it. But I'm really convinced now that much of what goes on in medicine is identical to what goes on in psychiatry.
Absolutely.
And It's just, if it's worse in psychiatry, it's because it's a direct assault on the brain and it has no physical basis at all, whereas a lot of medicine is good. You know, as Pam Popper says, you know, if you have a broken leg or your appendix is a bursting, you're thank God for the surgeons and the orthopedists and so on.
Absolutely.
But it's new to me to be co-sponsoring a conference with somebody who's in the nutritional field. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, in defense of you, I mean, seriously, and I've met hundreds and hundreds of doctors over the years and interviewed hundreds of doctors over the years. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, what we used to say is that what I used to document in my early films was that the medical doctors had received 2 hours or less of training on of coursework on nutrition. Now, you know, that was certainly the case if you even got 2 hours when you were receiving your medical degree. That is probably be a little stunning. But all of these years later, we're looking at 2017, and I was just looking at these statistics the other day, Peter, and it said that medical doctors today are receiving less than 25 hours of medical training on nutrition in order to get their MD. Now, that's over the course of their education, only 25 hours. So, again, this idea where we allowed the orthodoxy to convince us that the body is disconnected as opposed to connected, and that this is where all these specialties came in. That's why you needed a cardiologist, and you needed all of these people, and you had very few trained medical professionals who could look at things more holistically. I mean, why we have 80 and 90 year old people on 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 drugs is a direct result of this division within orthodox medicine that claims that, you know, that I'll give you something for your heart condition, and but, you know, when you look at the drug, it might rob the heart of the sort of vital nutrients that it needs in order to self-repair. So as you say, this is an old story. This is a decades-old story. And I think that the thing that has changed the most is really in the way that FDA regulates the drugs. Because in the 60s, at least in the 50s and 60s, we had an FDA that was more consumer-oriented. That's why, what was that drug, Peter, do you remember? Was it called DES, the one that caused birth defects?
The thalidomide?
Yeah, thalidomide, Desplex, or whatever it was called. But, you know, back in those days, they didn't allow the drug companies, FDA meaning, did not allow the drug companies to dominate healthcare. And it really wasn't until the 60s that the tide started to turn. So hopefully this for the young generation and that are coming along, my sons who are in their 20s and their generation and those to follow will be the ones that say, well, wait a minute. Let's look at nutrition and let's examine scientifically nutrition's effects on the body. Because why should we as taxpayers pay hundreds of millions and billions and tens of billions of dollars to subsidize the drug companies to quote unquote study a drug when so many more of these, so many other options exist? Why can't we take those tens of billions of dollars or a portion of them, a reasonable portion of them, and scientifically study nutrition? Why don't we do that? This is a really troubling mystery that has yet to be fully solved. And I can say that I have my suspicions. I can say what I put forth in my films, of course, to prove that the FDA has tilted the field towards the pharmaceutical companies. But there is no rational reason why we are not studying scientifically. What happens when you put celery, carrots, or vegetarian diet into your mouth? What happens in terms of disease, effect on disease, or prevention of disease? And this is an aspect that I hope that our, you know, children and grandchildren demand of our government, that we begin to take some of those taxpayer dollars and legitimately, scientifically, ethically study nutrition and its effect on disease conditions.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if we must have a government if they would at least have an Institute of Nutrition? I've been learning a lot from Pam's conferences and from Pam about what about why we don't have a better attitude toward nutrition. And it again just comes down to the whole money and power and the influence over government and government propaganda. At the universities here at Cornell, we have a big agricultural department. They're not going to have anybody teaching if they can control it at all. They won't have anybody teaching on subjects like, improve your health by never putting a bit of dairy in your mouth again for the rest of your life. They're just not going to do it because they're being subsidized by the dairy industry and the government's being, you know, subsidized on and on, and the lobbying from the dairy industry. And then you go to the meat industry and you get all the same things. To me, it's epitomized by the fact by the meat industry a number of years ago daring to sue even Oprah Winfrey. Mm-hmm. For criticizing hamburgers on television. Like, are you nuts? You're going to go after Oprah? I mean, they made the mistake of going after me for remarks I made on Oprah back in the 80s. And with Oprah backing me, they lost very soundly. It's the same follow the money trail, follow the power trail, follow the influence trail. And it is just as active in the vaccine area, in the food area, in the psychiatric drug area. And in, if you look at something like the statin drugs.
Area.
Yeah, the whole agriculture business and the medical drugs, you know, the statin drugs in particular, you know, they're as bad as the psych drugs and as useless, as best as I can tell from talking with researchers who've really put a lot of time and effort into it, going all the way back to Tom Moore writing about it a couple of decades ago. So it's everywhere. And so I'm changing in that I'm finally, when people finally now say to me, well, what about nutrition? I say, there's a lot of evidence for a vegetable-based diet. No, don't take something to jack up your dopamine or your serotonin. Don't take this or that supplement. Nearly all of that, if not all of it, is nonsense and some of it's pernicious. Eat good foods, largely plants. And it's, I think, very, very clear that that is enough of an answer for me to now begin to promote that as a part of what I believe now. That's new since you and I last talked, I do believe.
Absolutely.
I know it is.
Yeah, kudos to you. I mean, that's the key, is always, you know, continuing to grow. And there's a quote, as a matter of fact, it was just looking at it this morning, to learn requires a sense of humility. And, you know, I mean, most people get locked in and it becomes a dogma fight. And so, you know, not only, you know, are your recommendations strong when you say eat a plant-based diet, but, you know, pay the extra couple of bucks for organics, because, you know, you are at least, the very least, you are putting less pesticides and chemicals into your body. And, you know, I mean, let's face it. We do not have in this country, and we have not had since the 50s or 60s, for example, there's no selenium in the soil east of the Mississippi. Well, it used to be, you know, rife with selenium. So it's very difficult to get food unless it's organically grown, that actually contains the high levels of mineral content, of vitamins, and the rest of the wonder of nature, because we have depleted the soil. We've bombarded the soil with almost like an Agent Orange kind of a thing. I was in Vietnam for a trip. I was one of the first 200 Americans back in Vietnam in 1987 after the war. And I was there, and I could not believe my eyes when I saw that the multiple mountaintops, Peter, that were cleared by Agent Orange. And yet Dow Chemical and Monsanto and all the rest are all of the people now giving us the genetically modified foods that they claim to us are safe. Big scientific debate over that. And then, you know, again, growing all of these vegetables in chemicals that absolutely permeate the skin of almost every vegetable, of every fruit, particularly strawberries and these kinds of things that we all love. So, you know, you're right to say that this is truly expansive. It's not just psychiatry. It's not just orthodox medical drugs. It includes, you know, the chemical industry, the petrochemical industries. And, you know, they're clearly out for profit and they don't want people to, generally speaking, to eat organics. But the marketplace doesn't believe the science anymore. So they're going out of their way to support things like organics. The growth in organics is incredible over the last 20 years, Peter. And it's absolutely directly tied to, you know, what people might call health nuts from 20 years ago, because people started being conscious of how the foods were being grown. As you say, dairy. Well, when you talk about dairy, you talk about our old friend at the FDA, the second in command, Michael R. Taylor, who went back and forth from Monsanto. Well, you know, this is a guy that approved, while he was at FDA, approved the use of RBGH growth hormone, recombinant bovine growth hormone, that was put into milk. Milk that every child in America growing up drank in the 90s and to the present time. So it is expansive. It is a challenge. But more than ever before, like you, I feel extremely optimistic, Peter, that people, just as people are catching on to the real science and the real deal, the negative effects of psychiatry because of your work, millions and tens of millions of people around the country and around the world are now really educating themselves and becoming aware of the entire reach of the petrochemical industries. I think that is so encouraging, and it's such a bright light that it gives me great hope for the future.
I didn't expect to be going in this direction. This is, really great to be talking about all of this.
Well, you and I, Peter, you know, you and I have always had the most diverse conversations and respectful conversations about, you know, dozens of different topics. So that's why it's such a joy to be on with you. And I'm glad that we could cover this for people, because many of your listeners who know what a leader you've been for 40 plus years in the field of psychiatry, you know, it must be neat. It must be enlightening. It must be encouraging for them to listen, since you made this shift in your own personal diet and now are expressing that to people. I think it's absolutely wonderful.
It's so interesting for me now, as I watch television or look through a newspaper or anything that touches on the culture, to look at all of the ads for these huge sandwiches at the various franchises, and to be looking at all these foods and having the same feelings about that now as when I look at the drug ads that come on.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, we live in a world where all the propaganda, all the advertising is pushing us to unhealthy living. I never put it that way before, folks, but think about it. Practically all the sounds you hear around you, the organized sounds, the noises from radio and TV and from every form of advertising, if it has anything to do with living, it's unhealthy living. Of course, it trumps the effort it takes to learn about healthy living and to get used to eating differently. I'm already experiencing that I'm enjoying vegetables much more than I used to and learning ways to eat them and sauces that are healthy and so on. And it's all there, but it's so easy to get captivated into these more intense flavors and more intense calories and so on. And it's all got behind it the same kind of propaganda that's behind psychiatry, which is in the drugs.
To digest, you know, complex carbs that come from breaking down when you eat a carrot, for example, versus the simple carbs, which you, when you put a pretzel in your mouth or potato chips or something like that. I mean, it truly is transformational. And, you know, I think one other thing, Peter, since we're talking about this is like, then you have the hypocrisy from within the medical orthodoxy. You know, for example, as you well know, I mean, there's been this huge outcry over the past 2 years about opioids and the harm that opioids have done and, you know, creating addicts and driving people to heroin and now fentanyl and these awful things, all for these, quote, anti-pain drugs that they created and the mess that they created as a result of all that. Well, you got all these people, this grand outcry because of opioids. And, you know, I write doctors and call them oftentimes that are on the other side of the aisle and I respectfully say to them, well, why no outcry over antidepressants? I mean, why no outcry over antipsychotics in the long-term use? Why, you know, why are you not examining the damage done by antidepressants in the same way you are examining the opioids? And that never happens or rarely happens. So it's this crazy dichotomy between them thinking, oh, well, the drug companies put out this awful drug, opioids, and they withheld all of the addictive risks and all of these other things. But then they can't wrap their mind around the fact that all the drug companies did was, you know, barely pass the FDA's low bar science test to get antidepressants passed or become, you know, available by prescription. And yet they can't look at it the same way. They think the opioids are an isolated incident, which, as you know, and as I know now, you know, certainly 30 years in, is just absolute, utter nonsense. They're the same groups of people. They are not trying to heal anyone. They're trying to make money. And this has always captivated me about this conversation, because I've been on the other side of this. I've been the one saying, hey, there's wrong with you. You take a cholesterol drug and it robs you of the very nutrients in your body. It literally robs it, takes them out, you know, of your body. And, you know, you can't get to people on why these drugs individually are often very dangerous and that there are better alternatives. So anyway, I mean, the hypocrisy of it just astonishes me, that they don't look at these as companies trying to make money for their shareholders above all else. And the selective outrage really outrages me, to be honest.
I'm just laughing to myself, thinking back to the early 70s and early 80s when I first started talking about the profit motive of the drug companies. and I started to call psychiatric drugs products of the corporations. And I literally got blowback from psychiatrists for calling psychiatric drugs products of the drug companies.
Well, I'll bet you, you were in the crosshairs for a long time in the 70s because you were so far ahead of everyone else, Peter. Let's just be honest.
Well, let me get you back to your work. We've only got about 8 minutes left or something. Talk about, what's happened with your original great psychiatric film, Generation RX, the follow-up letters from Generation RX, and what you're doing with them. And I'm sure you can still use contributions. I do think you're the only individual whose projects I've ever asked contributions for. I think that's really true. I've never asked them to my own work, and I don't think anybody else's. So, yeah, I think Kevin Miller, folks, deserves contributions to help maintain his amazing work with films, because they're not a way to make a lot of money at all. And he really could use some help. Kevin, about your films for the rest of our time together.
Well, first of all, thank you, because you have been very kind, and I know that it's sort of going against one of your own rules, and I certainly never asked you to do it, but it's very kind of you, as you've done in the past, to ask people to consider contributing to the films. But importantly, we've signed since I spoke with you last, which I think has been about a year now, unfortunately. But we've signed a deal with a great distribution company based out of London. And the original film, as you recall, was almost 2 hours long, which is the longest film that I've ever made. But I knew that, you know, you're not going to get many, if any, commercial entities to air a two-hour-long documentary, particularly on the topic that it's on. So, you know, I set out with the distributors to create two new versions, and quite literally this morning I was looking at the latest draft of a, if you can believe it, Peter, a 52-minute version, which will be for 60 minutes worth of commercial television. So we now are going to have a 52-minute version and a 90-minute version to go with the original 2-hour. The 2-hour one will still play, of course, you know, online and theatrically in particular. But the other two versions, I think, are very powerful and effective because you can imagine. I mean, if you thought, almost all of the 2 hours was really powerful last time, you condense that down to 90 minutes. And it's really powerful and effective. And now you further boil that down to 52 minutes. I mean, again, the name of the game is education. So, I can't wait for these versions to be released. I think the first one is going to be released in June next month. And so if people want to keep up with that, they can either follow me on Twitter, Kevin P. Miller. They can go to Facebook and put facebook.com/lettersfromgenerationrx, of course, or they can go to lettersfromgenerationrx.com and sign up for our newsletter. And I won't hassle you or bombard people with newsletter stuff. It would just be to tell people where they can see the new versions of the film or other things that are going on with the film or about this topic. So those are really the things that are happening currently. And as I said, I mean, I'm super thrilled. I'm not, you know, as an artist, I'm not super happy to have to reduce my 2-hour film in any way, shape, or form. But being a pragmatist, I understand that we need to reach as many people as feasible to educate people and start to turn this issue around in the way that we were just referring to about nutrition 10 minutes ago. So that's my commitment, as you well know. And you know, I'm so grateful to have you aligned with me in the films. And, you know, certainly, I admire you so much for the work and the stands that you've taken. And it, you know, may not make my job easier, but it makes it easier knowing that the information that I'm putting in all of my films is credible. And I know it's credible because of people like you and Bob Whitaker and a few others that have done really the heavy lifting over the years.
Now, I want to emphasize for folks, too, that I'm not promoting Kevin Miller's films just because I happen to be in them. I'm probably in, I mean, Kevin might have a better idea, but I'm probably in 25 or 30 independent films of one kind or another. I mean, a new one just came out this past week where I'm the only expert in it. So that's not what the issue is. The issue is that from a heartfelt and scientific viewpoint, the work that Kevin's doing is just so good. And I'm never his only expert, and nor am I necessarily the expert he cites the most. Kevin really pulls from a lot of different places, which is very interesting, too, with his films. It's so good to be talking to you again. We need to talk more, you know. But I say on the radio quite often, I guess, maybe I think it a lot, which is that I'm in some ways a typical guy in that I have wonderful friends, but I never talk to them. So you and I should certainly talk together more often on the phone and keep in touch. And we're such a lot of help and inspiration to each other that it's a great thing. Do you have any bites for getting the 52-minute on TV? What do you think your odds of success are?
Oh my gosh, I actually think they're really strong. Because in part, some of what when you boil it down, what you're left with is, as you said, the science and the history. And of course, you get some of the human stories, but you're not going to nearly get the breadth of them that you would before. But you keep boiling it down, and you really get the historical context for this. And obviously, you're right in the thick of all that in both of my films when painting the awful history of FDA's decisions and, again, the 1991 Prozac hearings all the way through to the present. So I think the chances are excellent. And I know that the film has already been shopped around to some television outlets in Europe who are interested, and they haven't even started the United States yet. So I'm very optimistic, Peter, that we're going to see this on throughout North America and throughout Europe to be sure. So fingers crossed, but that's the whole reason why we're doing it, so that we can reach millions of people at once with one airing.
Well, folks, getting near the end here. Remember, it's ultimately all about providing you and as many other people as possible all the information you can use for having a better life. And I'm really glad to be expanding into sharing more of my thoughts now about everything you put in your body, not just the drugs, because you know, it's been said we are what we eat, and of course we are what we drink, and that's true to some extent, but I do think we also have a spiritual life that can rise above all of that. But it sure is good to have a healthy brain and a healthy body to enable your spirit, your soul, your identity, yourself, your personality fully express itself in this earthly journey of ours, which is so surrounded with pitfalls. And so surrounded with interesting and exciting things, some of which I'm pleased to share with you on the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour. Kevin Miller, thank you so much for being on my radio show.